Hour on bbsradio.com. This is Wednesday, the 2nd of April, and I am your one-hour host for the special Wednesday broadcast, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour, and we're going to talk about the news that does not make the mainstream. The mainstream is really not the news, as you may have already figured out. Those of you tuning in for the first time are in for a bit of a treat, because you're going to hear the news as it really is and not what you hear on TV, not what you hear on mainstream radio. They don't really want the truth to get out, and they, being the powers that be, the people that control the world's economy, the people that control the food sources, the people that control the elections, and every other aspect of your reality, your children's education, your education, if you're still in school, the stock market. I can go on and on and on. They're controlling basically everything, and they're not really doing that great of a job at it, other than they're keeping you from knowing what's going on. Of course, we are in a time when people are expecting the government to provide answers, and that plays right into their hands, because their game has been to create situations where you depend on them fixing the very problems they intentionally create. It's a catch-22 situation, you could call it. And because of the catch-22 situation that they have created, they want to keep you in the dark, which is where they operate from. They operate from the dark because you can't see what's going on. And so they rely on our ignorance. They rely on us buying into what they feed us. And where does one draw the line as to what is real and what is not? It boils down to you knowing within yourself whether something is true or not. It boils down to you perceiving the reason for certain types of news coming out and other types of news being covered up or hidden from you. Would our government do that to us? Well, one would hope not. And as long as we remain ignorant to the methods that they use to do that, we will trust that they're always doing the right thing for us. And I would like to myself know that my government had our best interests at heart. But the way the game is played, you have a small clique of individuals in comparison to the rest of the world's planet and population that are running the game for their personal benefit to the detriment of everyone else. The world's population is waking up and is becoming discouraged with the false promises. We've had them my whole lifetime and definitely your whole lifetime. If you are less than 100 years old, you have experienced this your whole life. In fact, this goes back thousands of years. The media, once it was created, was bought up and controlled by a select few privileged, and I put that in quotes, families, whose intention was to control the information that came out for the purpose of controlling you and me and all of us together. And the game is multidimensional, and it takes on various characteristics. On a national level, it becomes very political. On a worldwide basis, not only is it political, but it's really a smaller group of people running the whole show. So how do we deal with this? Well, we must face some of what's going on, and we must be able to recognize when we're being played sort of like an out-of-tune banjo, I like to say, and read between the lines. Do some research on your own. The internet, of course, is a very good source of information. If you are hearing this program via the internet, then you know that there's quite a bit of information available to you in places you would never imagine. But we can't accept that information readily without questioning it, because these folks, and these are the folks that I was talking about a moment ago, and still am, are very much in tune to the fact that we are waking up and we are discovering the con game. And it is a con game. It is organized crime. It is their policy to say the end justifies the means. Do whatever it takes to take power, to seize power, to seize more power. And there's an insatiable greed that drives their quest for power. There isn't enough money that would satisfy them. There isn't enough control that would satisfy them. In fact, ultimately, they would have to destroy themselves to carry their plan to its completion. And that makes absolute no sense. So with that goal in mind, one would have to presume that that is the ultimate plateau of success on their part, and it's pure insanity. It can go nowhere but down. And that's what's happening. We see it all around us. People are starving. I've heard recently, very recently, that people in Los Angeles are now living in tents. You have a tent city in Los Angeles developing. Home of Hollywood, home of the movie stars, home of much of the media that we're fed, and also where a lot of the propaganda is produced in movies and audio and all the TV shows that are designed just to brainwash you and control your mind. So we're going to share some things that have come my way that I think are kind of interesting. Of course, the main topic in these days is to tell us how wonderful the candidates we have running for the presidency are and what they can do to make America a better place while they continue destroying it, mind you. Instead of pointing that fact out, they're just trying to further hoodwink us into accepting three puppets as potential leaders of our country. And it used to be this was the most powerful country in the world. It no longer is. It hasn't been for a long time. It's just that all of the factors that demonstrate that fact are actually coming to fruition right now and will be within the coming months. From an article at lifenews.com, this is from the editor Steve Ertelt. I think that's how you pronounce his name. It's called Barack Obama Would Back Daughter's Abortion. Quote, don't punish them with a baby. And this is from Washington, D.C. Barack Obama is drawing gasps from pro-life advocates today over comments he made during a campaign stop in Pennsylvania over the weekend. the leading Democratic presidential candidate, appeared to back a potential decision by his daughters to seek an abortion, saying he wouldn't punish them with a baby. I guess there's no mention of how that baby would come about, but having a baby would be punishment. Now, let's think a moment. This is commentary, by the way. I have a tendency sometimes to single out these points as we come across them so we don't have to come back to them a second time. Who's being punished? The two individuals that engage in the sex act that produces the baby? Oh, my goodness. Okay, I go on with the article. Obama's comments came in the context of off-the-cuff remarks addressing the issues of AIDS. The candidate indicated he favored teaching both abstinence education as well as sexual education, and he appeared to be hard-pressed to come up with something else to say when he brought up his daughters. When it comes specifically to HIV/AIDS, the most important prevention is education, which should include abstinence education and teaching the children. Teaching children, you know, that sex is not something casual, he said. But it should also include other, you know, information about contraception because, look, I've got two daughters, 9 years old and 6 years old, he added. I am going to teach them, first of all, about values and morals. But if they make a mistake, I don't want them punished with a baby, Obama said. David Brody, a correspondent for CBN News, noted the comments and said he was surprised by Obama's candor. I understand Obama was talking off the cuff and these were not prepared remarks. I also know that when you're on the campaign trail 20 hours a day, you will say something you wish you hadn't, Brody wrote on his blog. But still, punished with a baby? That just doesn't sound right, he added. Why use the word punished? I would think that word would be alarming to people and possibly offensive to those who have had babies out of wedlock, he wrote. Brody said Obama brought up abortion again later on in the speech, and referred to his daughters as miracles. This is a very difficult issue, and I understand sort of the passions on both sides of the issue. I have two precious daughters. They are miracles, Obama said. Brody contacted the Obama campaign for a response and heard back from Bill Burton, his national spokesman. Burton largely ignored the punishment remark and merely said Obama favored reducing teen pregnancies and abortions, and stated Obama's comments about his daughters. What Senator Obama said and what he believes is clear. Children are miracles, but we have a problem when so many children are having children, Burton said. As Senator Obama said on Saturday and on many other occasions, parents have a responsibility to teach their children about values and morals to help make sure they are not treating sex casually, Burton told CBN News. Obama's remarks are likely to add another reason to the list pro-life advocates are developing as to why he won't get their vote this November. They appear to align him squarely with abortion advocates who view laws protecting unborn children as punishing pregnant women by forcing them to give birth to the baby instead of taking the child's life through abortion. Now, there's, as I already described in my opening, there's a bit of insanity in this whole argument. We have a school system passing out condoms to kids. Now, Burton himself said that it's the parents' responsibility to educate their kids. Then why are we sending kids to school? The simple answer is school is nothing more than precursory mind control for the rest of your life. They've determined that 13 years, and I find that a coincidence, that we go to a mandatory school for 13 years before you can get a general education diploma. And the school system has deemed it important not to teach sex education as they did when we were, some of us older folks, were growing up, and we had biology and chemistry and physiology classes in the areas of science. Physiology was to teach us about the human body and to teach us about food and nourishment and health. They actually did very little to teach us the reality of the human body and what we would face by a government that poisons our air with chemtrails, poisons our water with fluoride, poisons our food and permits the poisoning of the food, poisons medicines. In fact, all medicines are toxins. And so there's a bit of hypocrisy when they say it's up to the parents to educate the kids. Any loving parent is going to sit down and have the birds and the bees discussion with their children, if they care about their children and they want to ensure that they avoid mistakes. It seems to me that Barack Obama's scapegoat, even though he describes that his daughters are miracles, that somehow a miracle can go wrong, and certainly under the influence of this government that we have today and the policies that have been carried out over the past 230 years in the United States of America, there is a reason to fear a miracle going bad. It's happened millions of times, and it will continue to happen until these people are driven out of office, until the power that they think they have is shown to be and understood as nothing more than an illusion. So here we have a miracle, and yet it can be defeated by an illusion, and then we have someone else defending the really sick remarks that Obama made. This is just insanity playing itself out. And there is no argument. Now, they mentioned specifically that HIV/AIDS, the most important prevention of this, and we're talking about a disease that was manufactured in a laboratory and given to millions of people, not just in Africa, but allowed to spread throughout the world, that education is going to stop it. We need to stop the people that are manufacturing this stuff. And there are cures, and they need to allow the cures to be a part of the freedom of choice that all human beings have when they are given the gift of life by the Creator, who we like to call God, those of us that believe in a Creator, or those of us that know there is a Creator. Now, sex is not something casual, and yet it's treated in a casual manner. It's treated as though, okay, well, there's a baby, there's life in some form being created here, and we have the power to end it. It's the same choice that the government makes randomly about anyone who disagrees with them, anyone who is an enemy to their mission to take over the earth and control everybody, to enslave the population, if not outright murder them, which they have shown they're quite adept at doing. So there's quite a bit to argue in Obama's statement here, and I find it very hypocritical. Here this man arises out of nothing, a no background existence, and all of a sudden he's catapulted into a position to run for the presidency of the United States. Absolutely ludicrous, absolutely insane that the media is promoting this, but of course we've already discussed who controls the media. So as we connect the dots and make comparisons to why the media is pushing such an individual, there is no reason, but it makes as much sense pushing Barack Obama on the public, or Hillary Clinton, or John McCain, as it does Paris Hilton, or Anna Nicole Smith, or any of the other blonde bimbos that they like to parade before us, again, for mind control. So I find this article rather interesting that Obama has made another public gaffe, and they're there are people there ready to step in and go to his defense. And if the campaign puts that kind of a stress on a person's thinking, what the heck do they think is going to happen when he becomes president? You want to talk about stress? Oh, my goodness. Let's just think outside the box for a moment, folks, and realize that this is all an illusion. Everything that they're putting before us is nothing more than an illusion. And as much as we buy into it, we succumb to the game. Quick story here. This is about Chelsea Clinton. This came in my email. I thought I would share it with you. After Chelsea returned from a date, Hillary asked her if she had a good time. Chelsea said she had a wonderful time and thinks she's in love. Hillary said, "You didn't have sex, did you?" Chelsea said, "Not according to Dad." Just thought I'd share that with you. Of course, that's a joke, but it might be true. If you read Thanks for the Memories, the book by Bryce Taylor, you'll find rather interesting that both Hillary and Chelsea have been intimately involved with the former CIA-controlled sex slave of the MK Ultra mind control program, both at the same time. It's interesting. So I find this joke is rather apropos, if you want to call this. Okay, on a different slant, there was a miracle that occurred in Egypt recently, and I'd like to share this with you. A Muslim man in Egypt killed his wife and then buried her with their infant baby and 8-year-old daughter. The girls were buried alive. He then reported to the police that an uncle killed the kids. 15 days later, another family member died. When they went to bury him, they found the 2 little girls under the sand, alive. The country is outraged over the incident, and the man will be executed. The older girl was asked how she had survived. A man wearing shiny white clothes with bleeding wounds in his hands came every day to feed us. He woke up my mom so she could nurse my sister, she said. She was interviewed on Egyptian national TV by a veiled Muslim woman news anchor. She said on public TV, "This was none other than Jesus because no one else does things like this. Muslims believe Isa, or Jesus, would do this, but the wounds mean that he was really crucified, and it's clear also that he is alive. But it's also clear that the child could not make up a story like this, and there is no way these children could have survived without a true miracle. Muslim leaders are going to have a hard time to figure out what to do with this, and the popularity of the Passion, I believe that's the Passion of the Christ movie, doesn't help. With Egypt at the center of the media and education in the Middle East, you can be sure this story will be spread. Christ is still turning the world upside down. Please let this story be shared. The Lord says, 'I will bless the person who puts his trust in me,' Jeremiah 17:7. Again, please share this story with others." And I don't have a web address or anything for this, but I imagine you could probably Google murder miracle in Egypt and come up with a story. I didn't take the time to do that. Now, we have some rather sad news. This is not for the purpose of sounding negative. We like to at least point out what's going on, and you draw your own conclusions if it's happy or sad, I guess. This is in relation to Rick Stanley's writ of certiorari, which we talked about on last week's TNT NewsHour with Attorney John Clark, who was representing Rick Stanley in the U.S. Supreme Court. And we also talked about it on Mission Possible radio show 2 weeks ago Sunday, as well as on three successive Evident Footprints show, which is my show that I host Monday through Friday on bbsradio.com. And John pointed out that this was an important case for all Americans because it has to do with our Second Amendment right to bear arms, as well as our freedom of speech. And for exercising, number one, his right to bear arms, he got 3 years in prison for violating a law that was struck down by the Colorado State Legislature. Now, the legislature in Colorado determined that any local laws voiding the carrying of a firearm was in violation of the U.S. Constitution, and so they struck down the local law in the area where Rick Stanley lives, and I say lives as a free man, not in the prison, of course, and he got 3 years, despite the fact that that law that he was arrested for and incarcerated was struck down, null and void. Now we have a bit of another insane contradiction there, that one court decides that the lower court or the lower incorporation, which is the town, cannot pass such a law, and yet this man went to prison for that. And the highest court in the land now is not even willing to listen to it. The writing on the wall implies that they feel they have the power to take arms out of our hands. And it's strictly a matter of interpretation, but the right to bear arms is what it is, period. And any attempt to reinterpret what has been accepted for over 230 years is merely an attempt to undermine these rights and strip us of them. Now, to speak about it is covered under your First Amendment rights, freedom of speech, and Mr. Stanley got another 3 years for speaking. Now, he implied that should the judges not rehear his case, that he would consider filing a warrant for their arrest under treason. And in fact, they're going against the U.S. Constitution, and that is the definition of treason in that case. And although he may not have handled his remarks as diplomatically as they would have liked him to, they found him guilty, and he got 3 years for exercising his freedom of speech. So the man is sitting in jail on our behalf for 6 years. What are we going to do about this? Well, there is an attorney by the name of Peter J. Mankus, who lives in Sebastopol, California, who wrote a letter to the sentencing judge in Colorado. And I'd like to read this to you. I think it's pretty interesting. Dear Judge, who I am. I am a 33-year member of the California State Bar, license number 52606, in good standing, a former criminal prosecutor, an ex-military brat, dad is retired U.S. Air Force, a self-made Second Amendment scholar, a person who believes that the Bill of Rights is mankind's greatest achievement, and a person who has never met Rick Stanley nor talked to him, but who is fairly well acquainted with his situation and the main facts that preceded his current predicament. I do not know Mr. Stanley personally. I have, however, read rather extensively his writings on the Internet, and I have talked to a few people whose judgment I respect, who have met him personally, and who have heard him express his views on certain issues. I am not associated with any group that formally supports Rick Stanley. No one has paid me anything nor offered to pay me anything to write this on Mr. Stanley's behalf. I write this as an installment payment that I must make for a selfish reason. my vested interest to restore liberty under a constitutional rule of law in our nation. I communicate with you as an independent, concerned citizen who is alarmed over what has been done by civil authority against Rick Stanley in contravention of his rights that preexisted the creation of society, government, and man-made law, and that survived the formation of society, government, and man-made law. Now, with that, we are going to take just a short break and give you some breathing space. And give me a chance to just sip on a glass of water for a moment, and we will be right back. You're listening to the TNT NewsHour on BBSRadio.com. Don't go away. And we're back here with the TNT NewsHour, second half of the hour. I've been reading from a letter that was written to the judge who sentenced Mr. Rick Stanley, owner of the Stanley Fasteners Company in Colorado. And Peter J. Mankus had the courage and the foresight to address the judge. And I'm going to continue with what I was reading before we took that short pause. Dangerous trend. There is a sickening, dangerous, appalling trend in our nation and apparently in Colorado and Denver. Too many who hold power in civil authority are intent on expanding their powers, on contracting citizens' rights, on abridging peaceful citizens' God-given rights, which were declared in the July 4th Declaration and later codified in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, which is the supreme law of the land. Those three documents, the Declaration, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, are the organic law of this nation. They are invisible glue that is supposed to bind us together as a nation and distinguish us from the rest of the world. The Tree of Liberty. This organic law is this nation's the Tree of Liberty. The natural law concept declared in the July 4th Declaration is the Tree of Liberty's roots. The Constitution is the Tree of Liberty's main trunk. The bill is the secondary branches off of the main trunk. The foliage is liberty. A citizen's daring to peacefully claim his or her rights is the water that nurtures the Tree of Liberty. A citizen's shedding of blood to enforce his rights and or dying in the attempt is the iron fertilizer that radically revitalizes the Tree of Liberty. Everything that stunts the Tree of Liberty's growth is constitutional poison. Every law that conflicts with the Tree of Liberty is a dry rot secondary branch, twig, or dead leaf that needs to be periodically pruned from the Tree of Liberty. What makes the United States a nation and a great one? We are a nation and a great one, not because of our technology or resources or anything else, but only to the extent we remain 100% faithful to our organic law and value and nurture our Tree of Liberty. That was not done in the various criminal prosecutions against Rick Stanley. Stanley was charged with violating one or more Colorado state laws and or Denver ordinances. Those laws, however, while laws and in that sense legal, are unconstitutional because they violate the United States Constitution, the supreme law of the land. Those laws, in that sense, are dead rot twigs that should have never have been unconstitutionally grafted on the tree of liberty. Those dead rot twigs are unconstitutional. This is because they conflict with the Constitution, this nation's supreme law. One supreme law. There is only one supreme law in this nation, the Constitution. Just as the mass of your car and the mass of my car cannot occupy the same space, the laws that your local civil authority claims Stanley violated cannot occupy the same space as the supreme law. By definition, those local laws are subservient to the supreme law, and when they conflict, the supreme law, by definition, remains supreme. Nothing trumps the supreme law. Nothing. Rick Stanley, I, and others, all armed and all virulently, intensely committed to this core concept, understand what I am communicating here and agree with this core orientation. He, I, and others know our history and where we stand on history's timeline and the price paid and the most precious currency, human blood, for the liberty we now enjoy or used to enjoy but no longer can take for granted. Irresponsible prosecutors or persecutors. Those who have persecuted Rick Stanley are irresponsible, out of control, legal punks who have hijacked civil authority. They perverted the law to persecute Stanley, and they call the result justice. I call the result an appalling, insufferable, egregious miscarriage of justice, and that is an understatement. Basic goal: make violence unnecessary to remedy a wrong. I write to you in the hopes that my voice and logic will help make it unnecessary that violence will have to be used to restore liberty under a constitutional rule of law. You and others need to understand that should it prove necessary for reasons independently of Rick Stanley, there is a hardcore of citizens in this nation who will resort to lethal force to defeat tyranny in all forms and disguises, to restore liberty. Four boxes of freedom. There are four boxes of freedom: soapbox, ballot box, jury box, and cartridge box. I am now on my soapbox. Understand, there were only three boxes before the cartridge box. I stress, only three. In Rick Stanley's case, all three of the first three have failed him. These four boxes are best used in the order in which I listed them. Violence is the only remaining remedy when all other remedies fail. What are peaceful citizens supposed to do when the first three boxes yield an oppressive result? Answer: read the July 4th Declaration of Independence, second paragraph, namely, "But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, and evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security." The first two paragraphs of the July 4th Declaration are arguably the most significant words and concepts ever expressed in any culture, in any language, at any time. Why? Because they declared that man has certain unalienable rights that are a gift from a creator that pre-existed and survived the formation of society and government. As such, no society, no government, no judge, no lawmaker, no mere mortal can strip anyone of these self-evident, unalienable rights. And when oppression becomes clear and insufferable, mere citizens have a right and a duty to rebel. That includes the use of lethal force to kill government actors who functioned as tyrant wannabes or useful idiots for same. Rail against these ideas if you want. As a nation, however, we legally celebrate them every July 4th, and there are millions of American citizens right now who have already made the decision to rebel because they are exasperated with government actors pissing on them and calling their perversions of the nation's laws rainwater. Origins of the July 4th, 1776 Declaration. The July 4th Declaration had many origins. the core idea of the right and duty to rebel is traceable to Algernon Sidney's disclosures concerning government. Scholars have proven that Thomas Jefferson relied heavily upon Sidney's discourses when he penned the Declaration. Sidney, in Section 36, the general revolt of a nation cannot be called a rebellion, of his discourses wrote, "By increasing the power of their master, they add weight to their own chains. Rebellion, of itself, is neither good nor evil, but it is just or unjust according to the cause or manner of it. 6. They who know the frailty of human nature will always trust their own, and desiring only to do what they ought, will be glad to be restrained from what they, from that which they ought not to do. It being much better than the irregularities and excesses of a prince should be restrained or suppressed, then the whole nations should perish by them. All disputes about right do naturally end in force when justice is denied, ill men never willingly submitting to any decision that is contrary to their passions and interests. The best constitutions are of no value if there be not a power to support them." This is a most interesting excerpt. Sidney set forth a simple, persuasive, quick test for determining if one's leaders or government is good. The test is this: a citizen needs simply to complain peacefully about whatever to his leaders and governments and ask the same to reform and wait to see if there is prompt, meaningful reform. If there is, one is governed by good leaders who desire to only do what they ought. If there is no reform, citizens have a right to rebel, to restrain, and to suppress the prince's irregularities and excesses so that the whole nation should not perish as a result of citizens being enablers in the further destruction of the nation by the leaders' perversions of the nation's laws. A timeless, accurate maxim of politics, law, and human nature is this: power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Another such maxim is this: politics abhors a void. Power will never expand to fill all voids. Another such maxim is this: power can be made out of nothing if there is sufficient will, audacity, boldness, and well-executed strategy. Rick Stanley and I and others understand well the dynamics of these maxims. We also understand, accept, and agree with what is perhaps the most famous quote attributable to Algernon Sidney: "This hand, enemy to tyrants, by the sword seeks calm, peacefulness with liberty." This nation's framers carried that core idea forward to our shores and codified it in the Second Amendment. Civil authority in Denver has broken faith with the founders' and framers' vision. It has wiped its collective ass with the Bill of Rights at Rick Stanley's expense. In doing so, it threatens my vital interests. What it has done is insufferable. These perversions of the organic law shall not stand as a precedent. Bill of Rights' basic purpose: end arbitrary discretion and codify results. The bill was calculated to take away civil authorities' discretion and to place certain matters 100% off limits and beyond the will or the power of any majority lawmaker, judge, sworn peace officer, executive, etc. in Denver. However, the bill's glue has let go through no fault of Rick Stanley's. No, indeed, those responsible for this development are his persecutors. The United States is no longer a great nation. We have come full circle. Too many of government's actors now wipe their ass with mankind's greatest achievement, the Bill of Rights, which is supposed to be a bulwark of liberty. That paper parchment, however, has proven to be inadequate as a legal barrier to keep government's agents from coloring outside the Constitution's bright lines. What are citizens supposed to do when that happens? Lump it? Lay down on their rights? Go along to get along? be another enabler in the further destruction of the constitutional rule of law? Rick Stanley says, no. I concur with him. We are no longer a great nation. Instead, we are a gaggle of elitists who think freedom is their liberty, right, and prerogative to oppress anyone like and including Rick Stanley who disagrees with them, even when the disagreement is manifested out of deep principle, conviction, and the highest respect for the law. In that sense, we are not meaningfully different from the Iraqi factions conflict, the Arab versus Jew conflict, and the Irish Protestant versus Irish Catholics conflict. In those hot spots, most everyone is fighting for the freedom to oppress the other faction. Framers' genius, divide power and empower the little guy with rights and arms. The framers' genius is that they knew power, the ability to obtain the desired result, could never be eliminated from society, government, politics, law, economics, and or human nature. They also knew that no man is an angel, that man has a potential for good and bad, and the best they could do to cope with the problem of power in man's nature was this, to keep power in check by dividing it and creating pockets of countervailing power. The framers divided power in this nation by A, creating three separate co-equal branches of government with a written constitution, B, this constitution has many built-in counter-majoritarian safeguards to guard against the passionate swings of a majority, the tyranny of the majority, and the ill-conceived policies of leaders, for example, staggered elections and electoral college, veto power, advice, and consent requirement. C. They codified certain rights in the Bill of Rights. D. They drew a distinction between the army, the government's army, and the militia, the people's army. E. They codified that the people have a right to keep and bear arms, which shall not be infringed. Hence, they declared that ordinary folk who are not employed by government have a separate independent right to arms, the pragmatic means to hold the prince to his promise. F. They declared that the people are the ultimate repository of all political legal power in this nation. And G, they codified certain rights of the people as stated in the Bill and throughout the Constitution. Rights are not a matter of government's grace. These rights are exactly that, rights. They are not a matter of government's grace. They are also not a mere privilege. Rick Stanley, I, and others understand the difference, sadly. Too many government actors in Colorado and Denver do not understand the difference or understand and do not care. In either case, they function as domestic enemies of the United States Constitution, and in that sense, they flirt with being arguably properly branded as traitors. More domestic enemies than foreign enemies. This nation has more domestic enemies of a United States Constitution than it has foreign ones. If there were no domestic enemies of the United States Constitution in Colorado and in Denver, Rick Stanley would never have been charged with a crime, would never have been persecuted, would never have been convicted, and I would not be investing my valuable non-billable time on his behalf. I write this because I perceive what has been done to him as a threat to me, and I am intensely, virulently pissed. Amistad lessons. Did you ever see the movie Amistad? I hope you did. It is a true story. The movie is excellent. It is about the capture of blacks in Africa, their transport to America on a slave ship, their mutiny on the ship, and what happened to them when they arrived in America and the legal battle over their fate, one that went to the United States Supreme Court. There are many gripping scenes in that movie. One scene is this. Early in the movie, a muscular black male slave who breaks free during a stormy night with thunder wields a knife to kill the slave ship's crew. I condone what the slave did. He was a free man torn from his nation, shackled, kidnapped, reduced to an insufferable status, abused, and was being transported in horrific conditions against his will. As a last-ditch effort to regain his freedom, he used lethal force. Much later in that movie, the same character during a courtroom hearing about his fate, while depending on lawyers to free him, stood up in the jury box and said something to this effect. Freedom. Give me freedom. In fact, I would insert, I saw the movie, and actually he said, give us our free. Give us our free. Which is his way of saying what has been paraphrased as freedom. Give me freedom. Every time I hear and see that scene, I compare it to earlier scenes where he made his freedom by using lethal force to regain his freedom. My point is this. That character got it right the first time and got it wrong the second time, because rights, freedom, and liberty are not self-enforcing. One has only those rights, freedoms, and liberty one is willing to kill for, to gain, or to retain, literally, if necessary. That is reality. War. The founders signed the July 4th Declaration, told the Crown in polite, professional, restrained language that they declared themselves independent. They knew the Crown would not let them go free of the Crown's rules. They knew there would be war. They knew they would have to fight. They knew that thousands of redcoats, soldiers of one of the world's then existing superpowers, were already embarked on ships, thousands of them, en route to subjugate them and to hold them accountable as prisoners. And they knew the Crown could and would send thousands of more redcoats. Yet, each signed anyway, and about half of the signers were lawyers. Deterring war. I write to you somewhat as an heir to those signers to protest what the persecution of Rick Stanley is. I am trying to reason with you and to enlighten you. I'm not trying to scare you nor threaten you. I'm trying to peacefully stake out certain ideas in the hope that they will prevail so that violence will be unnecessary. Having the guts to act on deep thinking is not core criminal conduct. General George S. Patton opined that no one is thinking when everyone thinks alike. Rick Stanley thinks, I think. If our thoughts differ from yours, that does not make him or me bad, or criminals, or stupid, or less wise in comparison to you. It is not a crime for me to tell you candidly what you need to know. Is it now time to revolt or to say, Sieg Heil? If it is now a crime for any citizen to peacefully communicate candidly with any government official to try to peacefully redress a grievance for another citizen, then the time to revolt has arrived. Whether you realize it or not, civil authority in Denver has egregiously abused its powers under color of law and has declared a peaceful patriot, Rick Stanley, a criminal, and its own crimes, law and justice. But to the extent it tries to scapegoat Stanley, discredit him, ruin his life, it only confirms that it, civil authority, is a mean-spirited, out-of-control, illegitimate criminal enterprise that begs for his long-overdue comeuppance. It is never time to say, Sieg Heil. Never, never, never. Once government makes it clear that it is a bad government and is hell-bent on continuing long trends of usurpations of rights and insufferable abuse, any day and every day is a mighty fine day to revolt. The law's lifeblood, experience, not logic. A U.S. Supreme Court judge once opined that the life of the law is not logic but experience. True. The war between the states from 1861 to 1865 was part of our national experience, which arose from various legal issues. The American Revolutionary War before that was part of our national experience, which also arose from various legal issues. Perpetuate the abuse inflicted against Rick Stanley, and you will contribute meaningfully to increasing the odds that there will be another outbreak of sustained violence. If you construe this candor as me attempting to improperly influence a government official, that is your problem and your misconstruction. No one will put a gag in my mouth. I am trying to reason with you responsibly by being logical, by citing facts, by citing law, by explaining things, by sensitizing you to possible scenarios, by trying to play a role of peacemaker here to responsibly try to influence you to be a guardian of liberty for Rick Stanley and through him for the rest of us, including yourself. Like Rick Stanley, his rights and my rights are not a matter of your or anyone else's grace. And with that, this message goes on for quite a bit, but these are the salient points and well taken. And obviously someone has taken the time to write from the heart and to intuit what is going on here. And as I prefaced my remarks earlier in the show, that we are being hoodwinked into expecting these characters to be our leaders, and in reality, much to our chagrin, these facts are not reported on the mainstream media ever, and there will come a time when the media will absolutely play no role in our future. And I would suggest that if you agree with me, then it's time to pull the plug on your TV set and find more valuable things to do with your life. And with that, I don't mean to sound like I'm preaching. I'm just trying to bring an awareness to my fellow citizens, the listeners here at the TNT News Hour on BBSRadio.com. Join me tonight on Evident Footprints, where my special guest will be Mr. Ken Adachi, the webmaster and author and journalist who posts many, many wonderful works on his website, educate-yourself.org. It's a tremendous place to go for really truthful information about what's going on in the world today, and especially in the United States of America. In the meantime, I look forward to seeing you on this show next week. Tune into Evident Footprints tonight and all the other fine BBSRadio.com programs that are basically appearing throughout the day. In the meantime, have a wonderful day, and I look forward to seeing you 10 p.m. Pacific time tonight. Bye now.